Yo, 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 welcome back to another episode of Fire Fairy, the place where we talk about all things queer, all things black, all things socially conscious as we continue to think about the ways that marginalized communities suffer daily. And I wanted to just kind of touch today on a point that I think I've hit on a little bit, but let's dig in, right? There are these people around the world that have this idea, like, just vote. Right, like if you just get out to the polls right now, you know, we're in the midst of election season and in America, because everything is quite exceptionally garbage, thanks to Agent Orange and his whole band of, you know, I don't even know what we call them, like Larry, Curly, and Moe, right? Like the three stooges that he has, except it's like 49,000 of them. But right now, we're kind of in this season where so many places, people are like going, you gotta vote, you gotta go vote, get to the polls, get to the polls, right? I've heard ads from everything with like gospel music playing in the background for Joe Biden to people that are like, hey, Joe Biden believes in science. Joe Biden trusts medical doctors, and he would have had this pandemic under control. Lots of these things. And part of me is already cringing because, like, oh my God, so many of these ads feel a lot like 2016 with Hillary Clinton, where we have to keep convincing the socially conscious people with just a little bit of sense to go and vote. But I think that we have to also keep in mind the other factors that are surrounding the voting process, right? We have to keep in mind that right now, early voting has started, and I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. And the lines sometimes, right, like these Jim Crow-ass lines are like, people are waiting 8 hours, 10 hours, 11 hours sometimes to vote. And I don't mean that as an exaggeration. I mean, literally, in so many of the black communities and minority communities, there's only one or two like booths or machines that are working. It's not as many poll workers or whatever the case might be. But people, if you're under the age of like 65 and you can't just cut to the front as a senior citizen, you might be waiting for upwards of like 2 or 3 hours at least just to cast your vote. And people go, oh, but just vote, right? Like that's going to solve all of our problems. Well, we voted, right? I've already early voted, right? I did a mail-in ballot a while ago, right? In September, because New York City sent theirs out. I think I got mine on like September 26th, and I sent it back by like the 28th because I needed to look at these other people that were on a ballot for like the judges' seats in a district where I used to live. But, you know, I think it's hard sometimes when people just go, just vote, right? And you try to do your due diligence, right? I am grateful that I have a mail-in ballot. That was the reason why I wanted to do a mail-in ballot rather than either traveling back to New York City to vote or registering to vote down here, because I at least felt like I was a little bit more in touch with the politics and policies that have been affecting my community in New York when I lived there. But it's hard sometimes because I was looking at the ballot, right? And even trying to figure out who some of these judges are, right? Like, you have some people that are running in, like, all five categories, right? They are running as a conservative. They are running as a Republican. They are running as a Libertarian. They're running as Green Party. And then they have this other one that's, like, working families, like, party. Like, there's all these parties, or not parties, right? But some, right? There are some, like, other parties that are out here putting themselves on the ballot, but it's hard to know candidates, especially people that work in the judicial branch, because if we don't have media coverage, right, if the local newspaper hasn't done write-ups to say these are the cases that this person has done, then it's we don't get a chance to access their voting record or to see what kinds of decisions they have come out of their courtroom. So when we're talking about doing our due diligence, I don't know who the hell these people are. And I'm literally looking. And that's why people start like doing this like alignment with a party, because sometimes you think, oh, yeah, if I align myself with Democrats, then they might have this sort of ideology that I agree with. Or if I align myself with Republicans, they have this sort of mindset. And so it helps people to kind of just be able to make easier decisions, because when you're in the booth, you've got like a couple minutes maybe to sit and try to figure out who these people are on the ballot. If it's not like the national offices, like the president, where we've gotten a chance to see people debate. There's no debate for an alderman or for the sheriff or for the like the circuit court judges or the Supreme Court judges, even for that matter, right? Like, we at least get, you know, with the Supreme Court confirmation hearings, we get a chance to hear people talk about like where they stand on some of the issues and what they believe. But we don't get that at the like the local levels, right? The local news doesn't organize debates to say, hey, these two people are running for judge in your area. Like, they went to this law school. These are the groups they're affiliated with. And this is what they believe, because that's what it comes down to. And when people go just vote, right, like, it's hard, especially if you are working, if you maybe have a family, or just are trying to do anything else to try to really sit with each of these candidates and go, this one is going to be the one that most aligns with my belief system. And so, like, we have, like, a couple things that are happening, right? When people say just vote, right, it's going to solve all of our problems. When people voted for Barack Obama, right, like, did systemic change happen all over the place? Some places, right, we did get affordable health care. We did try to, like, you know, forge the new, like, the Green New Deal and some other things to try to help the world and maybe, like, the society as a whole. But Black people didn't see a large change in terms of confronting systemic racism. Right, Trayvon Martin happened while Barack Obama was in office, and we voted for him. We were like, nope, Black man, we get it. And I'm not here to slam Barack Obama completely, right? Like, I was very mad about that. I was mad because Mike Brown had, like, a lot of, when Black Lives Matter started, Barack Obama was in office. So then who do I talk to now? I voted. I cast my vote. Do I go throw my vote at the Superior Court judge and say, hey, Barack Obama, somebody do something? Right. What do I do with my vote when the police chief or the sheriff or the like the hundreds of thousands of police officers we have everywhere still control the social system? Right. They still determine how many communities get 1,000 officers and how many get 4. Right. Which office do I go to about that? How does my vote then help me for that? So when we're talking about voting and trying to boil things down to, I loathe entirely when people do these gross oversimplifications of things. And they go, no, this is the only thing. No, no, girl, there are many, many things. And they're all interconnected, right? They're interconnected. And so we can't just say that, like, if I do this one thing, we'll solve it. I hate when people go, oh, if Black people all just do this one thing, if we all abstained from buying for one day, we'd show the economy, and then what, right? Like, they're going to fucking put black squares on their websites. They're going to paint Black Lives Matter on all of the damn sidewalks, and change still won't come, right? That, like, there's not a one-all solution for oppression and racism and sexism, but when people keep going, like, if we just vote, right, like, then everything else will be solved, we really neglect a lot of the very basic understandings of our democracy. And our we live in this fragile democracy. Like, all the time we see it, right? We see it with the response that politicians have to coronavirus here in the States. We see the response when it comes to our local officials being able to do something about quelling protests or trying to hand down judgments that actually hold accountable the people who have murdered Black bodies. You know, and so our vote is not just it, right? Like, our civic duty is complex, and it's so many things. And when we go just do this one thing, we miss all these other things that are all connected to that. We miss the fact that, like, some people really can't afford to sit in line for 12 hours to cast their vote, right? And nobody should have to, but we shouldn't talk about that, right? Because, oh, nope, just do this thing, right? That'll solve it, right? And if you don't have the time to sit and do that, and like, yes, our ancestors fought and died for the right to vote, but it's important for us to know that, like, there are big obstacles to voting. You know, in 2018, Brian Kemp purged 153,000 Black votes from the right, like, because he was still holding the Secretary of Office position in the Board of Elections in Georgia, right? While he was still in a gubernatorial race, while he was actively running for governor, and made it so that now Stacey Abrams can't get all of the votes that she deserved. And even still, she was still within the 1% margin that warranted a recount. And we were like, no, no. He was like, right, he is the deciding vote, the deciding factor that says, like, we're not going to do no damn recount. I won, right? I got 51% or something that I stole, right? Even when we saw that, even when Black people waited 8 and 10 hours in 2018 to vote, right? These were actual obstacles, right? Like, these aren't made up. And that's not, like, so we can't just go, just vote, it'll be fine, right? And we can't just act like all of these issues are just going to go away because I cast my ballot. Okay, I cast my ballot on November 3rd, and now what, right? Like, that change that we'll need to see, even if we got a decent candidate in the White House, isn't going to come tomorrow. It's not going to come in a week. It might in some small forms, but to really eradicate a lot of the problems of our system, we have to rebuild this thing from the bottom up. And that's part of why, that's why I call this podcast Fire Fairy, right? Because a lot of times I really do think, right, like, we have to burn this thing to the ground, right? There's so many ways that white supremacy has been entrenched in every facet of our society that it's impossible for us to ever have a discussion without talking about all the people that are affected. Like, when you get a chance, I would love if people would Google, like the hierarchy of oppression, right? It's like a pyramid, and it'll show, right, that at the top of the food chain, technically, because of how society is set up, is a cisgendered, white, heterosexual, Christian male. Right. That, like, that by the way that, like, at least in America. Right. And it's different sort of in other parts of the world. But whiteness is, you know, kind of a worldwide phenomenon at this point. And it affects everything from beauty standards to the ways that we divvy up funds. And, you know, because these things are real, then one vote isn't going to change all these systems, right? It's in the housing market. And people can try to, like, make all these excuses and go, oh, yeah, well, you know, if Black people just save their money up and buy a house, and then you find out that Black people are having higher interest rates and their houses are valued at lower, like, appraisals than their white counterparts, or if they just removed all the pictures and don't say any Negroes live here, right? Those are the stories that make it to the news, but there are millions and millions more, right? Like, and I put on Twitter today, I was just like, some of you girls failed basic U.S. history in high school, and it really shows. You know, there's all this data, all this history, and people just now, right? Like, when they say stay woke, I'd be like, I'm so tired of talking to sleepwalkers. I'm so tired of people acting like these things are, we don't know where it came from, or that, like, well, if we just do this one thing, right? Like, if you say just do this one thing, it means you don't even understand the complexity of the issue. And that, for me, is always an insult, because there's so much information out there. The internet is wide and vast. The books are there. You can go to the library. And when you read it, like, you could never read all the books on history to talk about all the ways that this country is garbage in so many ways, you know. And if we keep telling people, like, oh, girl, if you just do the one thing, right, then you'll be happy or you'll have solved it, you won't, right? Because all of the wealth and the privilege and the education and the money, it won't save you. I remember reading a bunch of years ago, Between the World and Me, I always butcher his name, but I pronounce it like Ta-Nehisi Coates or Ta-Nehisi Coates. I don't know how to pronounce it. But in the book, he talks about, right, like, the cost of the American dream. And the cost of it was that some people have to live in a nightmare. In order for white people to get the suburbs, Black people got to live in the projects, or immigrants got to live in tenement housing, or whatever you want to call it, right? Like, but also, then a lot of these immigrants, right, the Irish and the Italians and other people, in early era in America, right, in the, like, 18th and 19th century, these people all started to embrace the idea of whiteness because it unified, you know, this phenotypic difference. And then it wasn't like, I'm Irish, I'm white. Right. And that's how we get Black. Right. Like, without creating the other, we don't create the standard or whatever. Right. Like, that's how then people became marginalized. But if you completely omit or have these like ahistorical views of the world, then you can always just make real simple solutions to complex problems. If you go, right, well, if a girl should just stop wearing a short skirt and then she won't get raped, then you don't understand rape culture. You don't understand all of the different societal pressures that exist and all the ways that men, because we live in a patriarchy, get away with this. You don't even understand the conditions or the obstacles that people are up against. And so because of that, then you don't you can't talk to me. I'm not one of those people, right? Like, I think I have like some friends that were talking about like, oh, you know, part of being in a true democracy is being able to disagree respectfully. And I agree with that, kind of, right? We should be able to disagree respectfully, but not when it comes to like people having overtly wrong opinions, right? Like that we can have facts to like, to literally debunk whatever they're saying, right? So if you go like, oh, well, like we could do this and there's like a million facts and empirical data from all these sources to show it, right? Like if you say just vote, but we know that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote in 2016. If you say just vote and we know that Al Gore won the popular vote in 2004, when we suddenly have this issue with the votes in Florida where George W. Bush's brother is the governor and it also still demanded a recount and we don't get said recount, then you can't just act like, oh, do this thing, then you will have this thing, right? Like it's not a one-to-one. And there's all this data and all this history in our country, recent history, that shows that even when we do the right thing, we don't always get the rewards that were promised. You know, it like people get these jobs, right? They get these like these wonderful jobs, and you can still find out that you're being paid less than your counterparts. I have a friend right now who has worked at, I'm not going to say the name of the company, but a major production company. And she does all the work and gets literally a third of what her white counterparts who have worked there less with the same title get, right? Like because of her race, right? Because she is a black woman. Don't tell me that like if she just like go like, and she went to her bosses and talked about this massive pay gap because she does payroll. And then they gave everybody an increase and her. So then she was getting paid their old rate, but she was still making less than them. You don't just, there's not a simple solution for that, right? Like that was something that the company consciously decided or subconsciously decided, right? Like I don't want to spend all my time on people's implicit biases, but they do come into play when it comes to then people deciding what matters and what doesn't. And so they're not simple solutions for that. Some of the solution for me is that we have to talk to these people and name, you're biased, you're prejudiced, you're racist, you're this, you're that, like name it, call a thing a thing. You know, I don't believe in mincing words. I believe in speaking directly. I believe in saying what I got to say. And I probably will even try to find as much support as at my fingertips at the time. And then afterwards, I'll let you say what you got to say. But if it's some bullshit, we don't have no evidence to support it. And it's just you being like, I just want to have my wrong ass, loud ass opinion. Girl, fuck you. Nobody wants to hear your wrong ass opinion, right? Like, that's the whole thing, right? Like, people do this thing that Donald Trump does, right? And they go, well, we're always trying to be so politically correct that we can't say what we believe. You can't. No, girl, that's not what the fuck that's about, right? It's not about people not having an opinion. It's about the stupid people not being allowed to just shout whatever the fuck you want because this is America. Right. You can't just say stupid shit and go unchecked and then feel like, oh, now we should suddenly like listen to you because that's my right. Like, girl, but you're wrong. And we shouldn't have to listen to you because unpopular opinion of mine. But people shouldn't be allowed to be wrong and keep their wrongness in the face of evidence and then still shout it and be like, well, it's my right to be wrong. And like, then I don't want to hear you talk. I want a muzzle on you. I want to zip it. Please, girl, go talk to somebody. Like, please stop talking. Right. But like what happens is that then we try to suggest that like, oh, people can't have. No, people can have differing opinions. That's the nature of society. But when the differing opinions start to boil down to what's priority, right? Or what even actually matters, right? When it puts people in danger, because the thing that we know about this world is the folks that will be the folks that will be affected the most is the most marginalized, right? That's why I was saying, look at the hierarchy of oppression. That's why it matters. That's why we can't let Donald Trump keep going on TV and telling lies, because then lies spread, right? It's not just a matter of it being like, oh, he's wrong and he's just like that would be one thing, right? Celebrities have wrong, crazy hot takes all the time. It's fine. I think most of Charlemagne's like hot takes are always wrong, loud and wrong. But the reason why it's an issue is because then it empowers other people who also have that same wrong ass opinion and feel like it's right. When people can go, the Confederate flag is not a racist symbol, the Civil War was about states' rights, and you go, no, no, girl, no, 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 girl. Basic U.S. history tells us that the Confederacy was protecting their right to own slaves, their right to subjugate people. That's what the states were fighting about, the right to say these people are human and these people are not. That's what it's about. But when people go like, no, you should like, I should be allowed to like, no, fuck you. This symbol is specifically saying that this is what you believe. This is what it represents. And we can't divorce context because it's convenient. We can't mince words and go, let's be nice to the races. Be nice to the sexes. No, girl, that's not how this is going to go. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And it's super frustrating when people want to give space to them, but not to marginalized communities. I am of the belief that it's really important that we give space to the folks that really, really need it, to the folks that really deserve our empathy, that deserve to be heard, right? Like, not the loud racists, not the Donald Trumps and the Mitch McConnells of the world, not the Marco Rubios who don't believe in systemic racism or white supremacy, who don't think that a bunch of things are issues, but people who actually sit in the margins, right? Black people, women, trans people, trans women, right? Like, for my believers out there, right? I am Christian. And the Bible says that, like, we have to be concerned with the least of these, right? It's Matthew 25 and 40, I believe, right? It says, truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of these, for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, for you are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devils and his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison and you did not look after me. They will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or needing clothes or a sick person in prison and did not help you? And he will reply, truly, I tell you, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. This is the teaching of the Bible that so many people profess to follow, but they do not think about the most disadvantaged people, the most disenfranchised. We are quick all the time to make blanket statements about, well, black folks don't do this, black folks don't do that. And that actually will trigger me in a heartbeat, because people are frequently trying to tell us what we aren't doing. But there are lots of us doing lots of meaningful and specific work. But we don't make sweeping statements about all the good work we do. We completely rely on these stupid and fallacious, like false narratives that suggested like, oh yeah, black people are just lazy, stupid, freeloading, you know, like arrogant fools who spend their money on Jordans and they live in poverty, right? They rely on a Donald Trump sort of mindset that boils things down to like a few of those. And like, that's where these stereotypes come from. And I hate it, right? Give space to these poor people. Give space to the folks that had to wait in line. Let's put them on the news. I don't want to see another politician talking about how we're trying to install this crazy person who is not concerned about the least of these, who's not concerned about marginalized communities, because marginalized communities will always feel the ramifications of poor leadership decisions first. When people slash benefits, right? Like, it's going to be marginalized communities. It's going to be older people that might need, that live on fixed incomes, that need Social Security, that might need Medicare and Medicaid, that feel it first, right? When you cut funding for schools, it's not going to be the politicians that feel it first. It's not even going to be the principals. It's going to be the kids. It's going to be the families that depend on this food that they get from the school, this childcare that they get, and the education that's supposed to equip them to be able to try to now participate in society. So when you make these decisions and you don't think about the least of these, whenever people open their mouth, in my opinion, I think it is our responsibility to think about the least of us. That, like, and I'm not saying, right, like, that I am the most disadvantaged, oh, woe is me, oppressed person. I am a man. I am a cisgendered male living in a patriarchal society. That's a real privilege. You know, I am college educated and post-secondary educated. That is a real privilege in our society, right? But, like, there are like places where I am oppressed. And I think if we are able to start to think about who's more oppressed than me, how can I give them space? Who is more disadvantaged than me? How can I give them voice? How can I champion them? Even when nobody's around, right? Like, we think a performative activism in this way is like, oh, I have to go and shout it from the rafters, when really some of it is starting by checking our own bullshit mindsets that would actually marginalize people in our language, in our thinking of them, in our validation of their thoughts and their existence. When you don't check that, that's the first step towards changing society. That is the first step. The least of these. Where are you privileged? Where are you oppressed? And how do you take your privilege and leverage it so that you can help another more marginalized community? Don't tell people to just vote. The solution is not that simple.